Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 one and all, to another brand new edition of the official Redbird Rants podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 10, and I'm your host, Tito Rivera. I am one of the co-editors for our site, RedbirdRants.com, and I am joined tonight by my co-editor, Dr. Michael Miles. Dr. Miles, how are you tonight?
Hey, how are you?
Doing okay. We're here, I guess. Just got out of baby class, so I'm okay. And we are also joined tonight by one of our contributors, Christian May Suzuki. Christian, how are you today?
I've been doing good. I'm not exciting as baby classes, but hey, there's been a good day of sports, so I've been entertained.
Yeah, let me tell you, those baby classes were so riveting that I wanted to fall asleep. But I'm here. So, guys, let's get into it tonight. We've got a great show for everybody. So thanks for listening, and thanks for going to RedbirdRants.com, where you can find all our material on the St. Louis Cardinals, as they are currently losing 4-1 against the Minnesota Twins yet again. And we are going to talk about that first. Dr. Miles, what have you seen in the game today that – stands out to you?
Well, I think we would be terribly remiss if we didn't talk about how good to great Jack Flaherty looked. And he really had an outstanding game going. Yes, he fell apart, but he didn't implode. He gave up one run and just looked just absolutely outstanding. And I think the other side to that is we have to look at this horribly sluggish, sleepy offense. And, you know, as I've said before and will continue to say, I'm just flabbergasted that we, in the off season, got rid of Derek Lilliquist, although I'm okay with that. But we kept Mabry, and we're seeing this continue, this sleepy offense. And it's so frustrating to sit and watch. And then we also have to talk about, look, they brought Gregerson in, and that didn't quite work out. And they brought in Cecil, and that sort of worked out. It's really interesting to me. And now that Tui Viola is pitching, I'm really interested in watching, because I put up, as just a tweet directly from me last week, about this idea of should the Cardinals be finished with this experiment with Tui Viola? And I have to tell you that the results were pretty amazing to me, I thought. That the fans voted, and there were several of them who did, and they voted and said that, no, the Cardinals really shouldn't give up on Tui just yet. So, I think that there's a lot to be learned from tonight's game. I don't think it's something that will – persist. At least I hope it won't, but I can't be for sure with this coaching staff.
Sure, and those are great points to bring up, and we will go into that a little bit more, but let's hear from Christian. Christian, what have you seen in tonight's game that has stood out to you?
Well, I know Dr. Miles complimented how well Flaherty did, but I also got to give recognition to the guy on the other side. I mean, he had been struggling recently, but Berrios really pulled together a great game. His slider was working very, very well. It was very sharp tonight. He was really confident, putting it in good location. His fastball was lively. I know that there's a lot of issues with the Cardinal offense, but tonight I can give them a pass simply because, I mean, Berrios' stuff looked very sharp. What I won't give them a pass for is getting a guy who is notoriously had notoriously poor control and threw basically 50 balls and 60 strikes or so, and only walked one time. This offense this year, I don't think it's been talked about. I mean, obviously the strikeouts have been talked enough. This team is very poorly disciplined. They're hackers. They just swing and swing and swing away. And I mean, a lot of the times you see that they should walk four, three times, and they only walk once or twice. And giving stuff up like that, I mean, it's really reflective of, as Dr. Miles said, it's reflective of how bad John Mabry as a hitting coach has been. And I mean, like he said, I really don't see why he still has a job and a guy like Lilliquist is gone. And I just don't understand.
Sure. And again, that's a great point to bring up. And let's talk about that, the coaching staff a little bit more before I get into some other topics about tonight's game. And that's the notion of John Mabry. You know, last year and years before, you know, plenty of Cardinal fans have come for John Mabry's head. And we, I think, can come to a conclusion that Mabry's biggest cheerleader is Mike Matheny. But if we learned anything from the offseason, it's that John Mozeliak, you know, isn't going to keep playing Matheny's favorites or backing Matheny's favorites. Do we think John Mabry is here by the end of June, Christian?
Unfortunately, I mean, this is a team to me that isn't very much a team that would make that kind of move in the middle of the season, especially with the way that they overhauled the roster, the coaching staff, and yet decided to keep those two guys. And I think another big point in keeping him is the fact that the guys that we let go, that Mabry was maligned for, you know, guys like Stephen Piscotty, Randall Grichuk, Aledmys Diaz, these guys with a lot of hitting potential that many people, including myself, were very much thinking Mabry was a big part of the problem. Those guys have all proven, well, not really proven, they haven't really proven themselves. All those guys outside of Mabry's influence have still really, really struggled. And I think that because of that, I think that the Mozeliak and those guys will look more toward the players first and then the coaching staff. So I would expect it to happen more toward the end of the year.
Okay, fair enough. And I'll have a counterpoint, but I do want to hear from Dr. Miles on this. And Dr. Miles, the question is given the current state of the St. Louis Cardinals offense, do you foresee John Mabry making it, you know, to the end of June?
I want so badly to say no, but I think that he will stick around so long as Matheny sticks around. And let me say this, and Christian's, man, have you ever been dead on? The fact that the Cardinals lack walks, period. And they're so over-reliant on the home run that they come out, you know, swinging for the fences with everything. And you don't really see a whole lot of great flat hitters that have been under Mabry. That's just not something that's happening. We've got a lot of power bats in the lineup, and they think that they've got to go up there and hack at it and hit those home runs in order to win. And quite honestly, if you look at the games that the Cardinals have won this season, you know, they've been won by several runs. There's not a whole lot of close games, and I'd have to go pull up the data to look at it. But, you know, my memory is telling me that there's, you know, the games that we win, they're handily. I mean, there may be a 1-0 game or a 2-0 game that the Cardinals take on the back of a great starter pitching. And don't get me wrong, you know, I think those are phenomenal. But honestly, to me, I think that if anybody's going to go, it would be Matheny, and maybe would go, you know, as a collateral damage from that. And maybe that's in Mosaic's thought process. Maybe they've set this up to, look, we've given you all these supports now, and yet we're still seeing the same pattern of results. I don't know, but honestly, I have to tell you, if they're not going to send Greg Holland to the minors to make him right, if they're not going to send Matt Carpenter down to the minors to get him right, if they're not going to make those type of moves, then to me, John Mabry survives the month of June and probably July and probably August.
And for September for that matter too, right?
Yeah, probably. And to be honest with you, he's probably going to survive October and November and December. You know, the Cardinals historically like to make their decisions in January for whatever reason. And so that wouldn't surprise me at all either.
Unless your name is Greg Holland, obviously, and wait till opening day. And those are fair points. I think one of the counterpoints, and you guys both had mentioned, is the walks. And I find that very peculiar because we do have a player in Matt Carpenter that does walk a lot, but yet we complain about those said walks. Any reaction to that, Dr. Miles?
Well, I'll tell you, I think the complaints about Matt Carpenter would go down if we saw fewer strikeouts and more positive at-bats. With Matt Carpenter, you sort of get I'm either going to walk or I'm going to get a big hit. I don't get hits. You know, if he had to write his autobiography, it would be Matt Carpenter, I go 3-2, I walk or I get a big hit. It's not I'm able to move a runner. It's not I'm able to get a base hit. And I think that the conversation would be different in that regard. By the way, the Cardinals were just 1-2-3'd by Fernando Rodney, and we had to see that really obnoxious bow and arrow thing that he does. Really obnoxious. I'd only be okay with that if he were wearing the birds on the bat. It's just telling more so in the discipline of the batters than it is in their abilities. And, I've got to change this channel because Nick Swisher is one of the color commentaries for FS1, and that just shouldn't happen. But I digress. I think that, you know, what Christian talked about at the beginning, and I completely agree with you, Christian, is that they're just not disciplined. We're not working pitchers. I don't really see them coming up with a game plan in terms of how they're going to attack, you know, pitchers. And that's causing some really unfortunate outcomes, and I think we're seeing that far too frequently.
Yeah, and just to put everything in perspective, the Cardinals as a team have an OBP of 315. Let that sink in for a little bit, but that is good for 19th in all of baseball, behind the Yankees, the Cubs, the Braves, the Phillies, even Tampa Bay, even Kansas City, who coincidentally, those last two teams are playing each other. But that just goes to show you, you know, what you guys are talking about right there, is that the Cardinals' OBP is just so pathetic right now that they are just struggling. And to put it even worse, the Minnesota Twins, who they've lost three in a row to now, have a worse OBP than the Cardinals do at 313. So if the offense does continue to struggle, you would have to think something is coming. You know, the Cardinals can't continue to be mediocre on offense when they're receiving the starting pitching that they have been. And that is not an understatement, because the Cardinals' rotation has been great. There is no doubt about that.
But
they're a number three rotation.
Yeah, but to your point, if you would say that the offense has been struggling since the beginning of the season, and if that were to continue, you would see some movement. Well, then couldn't the counter argument be we've watched players like Carpenter and, you know, others struggle, and we don't see them, the organization making moves on them. And to, you know, to Christian's point, you know, he said that he thought that the Cardinals would make changes at the player level before they would move on to a Mabry. And I guess I'm just arguing if they're not making those moves, then I find it very difficult to believe, although I wish it to be the opposite, but I find it would be making a move on a, like somebody like a Mabry.
And I would counter that by saying that you are actually equivalent, you know, you're putting equal status to Randall Grichuk and Matt Carpenter. And do you think that's an actual comparison?
No.
And so I think that's where that argument is slightly flawed. And I understand the point of making a player move, because last year we saw that, and that is to Christian's point. We saw the Cardinals go after the players more than the coaching staff. But this time around, you have players that have been great for the Cardinals, like Matt Carpenter, who have been good in their career, like Dexter Fowler, yet they seem to be to just be struggling. And maybe, yes, they are on a decline, but neither of them are that old. It's not like they're 35. They're not a 36-year-old Jose Bautista or a 38-year-old Jose Bautista right now playing for the Braves. They should have more left in the tank, right, Christian?
Well, yeah, see, the thing is you are talking in the logical way, in the way that most people would rationalize it. But see, unfortunately for us, based on moves that we've seen, a la keeping Matheny and Mabry and getting rid of everybody else, these guys don't go logically sometimes. They're very stubborn, and they sort of have their own idea of how things should be and how they want it to be. And I mean, it's just a matter of predicting what they're thinking. And I just don't think that at the end of the day, they're thinking that it's Mabry with the amount of faith that they've kept in him through all the years. You're absolutely right. Everything you're saying is 100% correct. And that's what I'm hoping that they're thinking, and that's what they should be thinking. But I just can't – in my heart of hearts, I just don't – that's not what I believe that they're thinking.
And that's the – I think, you know, honestly, the conversation isn't necessarily to prove anyone right or wrong, but that's just the reality that, you know, the Cardinal fans live in right now, is that we're just not sure where this is going to go, because we've had so many different stories – Grichuk, Piscotty, Diaz, now Matt Carpenter and Dexter Fowler, and the narrative has flipped on us. It's no longer, hey, the players are doing this. Now we're saying, oh, no, but it's the coaching staff. And it could be both, and it probably is both, but that's the reality that we're living in, and that is the very frustrating part about this offense, because if you really look at the Cardinals' offense, are they that bad? No. But what happens is they get into these stretches of runs of terrible offense where we're only scoring one or two runs a game, and then we explode for 20 in the next five games. And while that's great, there has to be some consistency, and you're not getting that from your offense right now. And that's partially due to, you know, lineup construction, I believe, and we can go into that some other time. But you've got players that are just not performing. And I think this is all highlighted, and I want your guys' opinion on this. I think this is all highlighted on Yadier Molina's absence. And that can, I personally believe, his absence is just so profound on this offense. It really has not been the same since he's started missing time. What do you think, Dr. Miles?
100% agree with you. And And the reason so, from my perspective, is twofold. Number one, we all know that Yachty is the on-field manager, that Yachty is the dugout manager, that Yachty is the pitching coach, that Yachty is, you know, all of the above. We know that. And so a presence like his being absent is going to be felt. Additionally, we have to throw in, you know, the absence of Adam Wainwright, because Wainwright is a veteran presence in that, you know, in the clubhouse, and very well liked by all the players. And that's going to have an effect. But the second point about Yachty, which I think really goes along with our conversation that we were just having about Mabry, is that Yachty really is that slash hitter. That, yes, he's got the power, and he can hit for power, but he also can get up there and get a base hit. And without that, then what you've got is a one-trick pony offense. And Yachty was in there right in the middle of the lineup as not a leadoff, as not a power bat, but as a bat that you had to respect every time he came to the plate. And primarily so because he was uniquely different from everything that Matheny seemed to have coached all of the others. And Mabry seemed to have coached all the others.
Yeah, Christian, any reaction to what Dr. Miles said about Yachty and my notion that, you know, this offense just hasn't been the same without him?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with both of you. I'd like to go back to your point on the lineup management, Tito. You know, sure. Ever since Yachty has been out, or, you know, let's just say in general, the lineup has sort of been experimental, you know. Matheny and Okendo and all those guys, they've been sort of plugging in and out. And, you know, they've been trying to find out, you know, who's where and who's who. But there was one guy that if you always look through the lineup, he always seemed to stay in the same spot. He was the rock right in the middle of the lineup. He was a bit consistent. And, you know, he was that factor that was always there. And that was Yadier Molina. If you look at all those lineups, he usually stayed in that same spot, and he manned that same role, and he was that guy in the middle. But ever since he's been hurt, the middle of the lineup especially, it's just been shuffled around and around and around. You got guys like Bader hitting up top sometimes. You got guys like Sam hitting up top sometimes. Carpenter, you got all sorts of different guys that have been just circling around the top of the lineup and the middle of the lineup since Yachty's been out. And I think that really, I mean, if they were complaining about not really having a set role before, I mean, everybody seems to be in a different spot every day now. And I think that because of Yachty's absence, there's no real comfort, and there's no real, you know, sort of order and organization on offense. And like you were saying about how there's no real plan to attack, I don't think there's very much planned in the lineup either. I think that without Yachty, they're kind of just throwing together groups of people and hoping that it works out. And I think that right there, I think that really shows how profound the loss of Yachty was for us.
Yeah, and even to accentuate it even more, because that's what we do here at Redbird Rants, we try and do that. Entering today, Carson Kelly had a win run created plus of negative 50, and Francisco Peña's was 5. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, it's obviously not good, but again, it just shows you how important Yadier Molina is to this team, and it just sticks out as a sore thumb, you know. It really does, and that's just that's the reality that the Cardinals are facing. And I'm going to leave you guys with this one last fact on the Cardinals' offense, because I do think that it is extremely important. And that is the total amount of extra base hits that the Cardinals have had this season. They are currently sitting at 100 extra base hits, which is 28th in Major League Baseball, only above the Miami Marlins and New York Mets. So 28th in extra base hits. This Cardinal team just is not putting together good at-bats at the moment, yet they're still, you know, within the top of their division, much like pretty much all the other teams except the Reds. So, you know, if you want to look somewhere, the contact, the ability to hit for extra base hits, it's just not there right now. And we're going to talk about a little later of what the Cardinals should do to make that happen, but we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the official Redbird Rants podcast, episode 10 for season 2. Stick with us. Okay, we're back with the official Redbird Rants podcast. I'm your host, Tito Rivera, and I am joined by my co-editor, Dr. Michael Miles, and one of our contributors, Christian May Suzuki. Guys, we just got done talking about the struggles the Cardinals have had. We talked about the game, and I do want to mention thank you to Christian for shouting out to Jose Berrios. He's Puerto Rican, so, you know, I'm going to give a fatty shout out to him too. And he did do well. And there's not much you can say when you go against their best pitcher. But that does bring me to this point. Continue with the Cardinals offense, and this is something that I've raised before in our podcast. Yet again, we see the Cardinals struggle against the best pitchers on good teams. And not saying that Minnesota is a great team or a good team right now, but they were in the playoffs last year, and Jose Berrios is easily their best pitcher. Dr. Miles, here we are once again having this conversation. I'm gonna beat this drum all season long. If the Cardinals can't beat good pitching or the best pitching, this team isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, and you're not going to get me to disagree with you. Listen, you have to make wins and collect wins against the weak components. That has to happen. But you must be able to take at least two of three against the best. And like you pointed out, we're just not seeing that. And what that tells me is, let's fast forward and just pretend the season finished today and the Cardinals have to go into the postseason or get to go into the postseason. And they're in, let's say they even win the National League Central, which, by the way, I don't think is going to happen. I'd be pleasantly surprised. I just don't think it's going to happen. But they go into the postseason as the NL Central pennant winners. They're going to have to play a series of five. Well, that means you're going to have to face the best twice. And if we haven't seen them be able to better the best pitchers, those are two losses right there. And, you know, in a best of five, man, you've already set yourself in a hole. And that's going to be deadly. So I completely agree with you. I think until they figure out this lineup and start hitting, and start hitting against the best, just like you pointed out, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and to put it in other terms, you know, it's just they, for whatever reason, they cannot hit top pitching. And yes, I get it. It's top pitching, and it will be hard to hit. But Christian, you have to find ways to win, like Dr. Miles is saying here. And you know, we've seen them do it in the past, you know, for instance, against Clayton Kershaw, but that's only one guy. Everybody else seems like they can't really do, you know, much else, right?
I mean, I find, at least recently, I give them somewhat of a pass simply because, you know, at the end of the day, there is a psychological block when it comes to playing a game and you're facing down their number one pitcher and you don't have your number one pitcher. With a team, especially that's been struggling on offense recently, I mean, that can really play on your head. Seeing that matchup, I mean, days before, continuing to struggle, I am honestly more concerned right now. Before they beat the best pitching, they got to beat the worst pitching. I mean, let's look at the Cardinals' performance against, like, rookie pitchers, for example. we are letting rookie pitchers with their first appearance in the major league basically no-hit us, you know, one-hit us, and not maybe giving up 2-3 walks when they should be giving up 6 walks, as I mentioned before. Like, at the end of the day, they have to prove that they can hit even the lower tier pitching before we could start talking about hitting, you know, guys like Clayton Kershaw or Matt Scherzer. I mean, at the end of the day, this team is not there on offense. It's no one can really say that this team has an offense that's a World Series caliber, a elite playoff caliber team. That's just not been shown yet. Now, they most certainly could, big capital C-O-U-L-D, they could perhaps on paper have that sort of talent, but until they can show that they can consistently hit against, you know, guys like Seth Mania, guys like whoever the Pirates rookie pitcher was, you know, some of these guys that if you're looking at the game on ESPN, you see the Cardinals score 0 runs and you look at the pitcher and you're like, who is this guy? And, you know, those things like that, you can't lose with games like that. And so I think before we really talk about beating guys like Kershaw, because God knows if this offense can't hit a guy like a rookie pitcher, you know, with probably nerves shaking him out of his shoes, then how are we supposed to hit a guy who is a seasoned veteran with elite location, elite control, and knows exactly what to do? So, I mean, the Cardinals have to put together consistent runs against bad pitchers first, and then we can really talk about trying to get good pitchers down.
And that's fair. And you do bring up a good point with rookie pitchers or less known pitchers. They do seem to struggle against them, and for good reason. I think, you know, you can chalk that up to, you know, just not being familiar with them. And I think why I don't give it as much of a pass, or why I give that a pass over the big guys, is they will see the big guys more often, or they have seen the big guys more often, so you'd think they'd be able to adjust. They don't have that opportunity to adjust to somebody that's, you know, just starting out or a rookie pitcher. So I see your point, and yes, they should be hitting off, you know, should be teeing off of rookie pitchers, but I believe it's a lot harder to do that, not knowing what the stuff is or who this person is, versus somebody that you've seen a lot. And there are some exceptions. I mean, you can certainly look at Jake Arrieta's matchups versus Matt Carpenter, for instance, and how Matt Carpenter's, you know, whatever, 1-for-25. And that's not saying much, because it feels like Matt Carpenter is actually, he's less than 1-for-25, but he feels that way right now. But that's a good point. Any objections or anything you have to say to Christian to Christian on that, Dr. Miles?
No, I just wanted to add one thing. I do think that the Cardinals could beat Clayton Kershaw right now with him being injured. But even that, I sort of hesitate to say, just because of the caliber of who Clayton Kershaw is. But no, Christian makes really fantastic points. And I have to tell you, it just sort of dawned on me that I want to go back and take some time to look and see how John Mabry did facing pitchers who were new. I've looked at a couple of things in terms of Mabry's ability to be a hitting coach, and we're starting to see these seasons of Cardinals regressing to Mabry's mean. And I wonder if the same could be said about, you know, how he faced pitchers he had not before seen. That's just a thought.
Sure. And I think that's a good place to leave it at there. And we are going to go ahead and move on to our next topic. And that's going to be Mr. Adam Wainwright. And unfortunately, on Sunday, we saw him struggle mightily. And you know, he even admitted to, you know, the press and to media, something didn't feel right. And something happened to him. I think it was his third to last warm-up pitch, and he re-aggravated his injury. Yet he still pitched. And Dr. Miles, you wrote a nice little love letter to Mr. Wainwright. So if you get a chance on redbirdbrands.com, go ahead and check that out. And let's just be frank and honest here. Let's not get into the numbers. Let's just be 100% honest, 100% real here, Christian. When is enough enough for Adam Wainwright?
I think I put out, I don't know, it's been a while, but I put out an article a while back that actually professed that Adam Wainwright should go. I think it was probably before the season. I thought that Adam Wainwright should be in the bullpen for a very, very, very long time. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't even care about performance. You know, I don't care about winning with him. At the end of the day, I care about his health and I care about his long-term well-being. And Achilles injury is something you do not want to mess with. It's, at the end of the day, it's something that sticks with you. You know, for example, I thought of it like this. When you're talking about something like an ACL injury or, you know, some one of those big injuries like that, that's non-life-threatening, you know, you can have a long rehab process, but eventually, you know, for the most part, you'll get your normal stride back, and you don't really feel the repercussions per se. You don't like feel the ACL. With an Achilles, every day you're walking on it, you're putting pressure on it, you're feeling that. And whether or not he's was injured, or whether or not it was done, or whether or not what Mish said was true and that he never really recovered. I mean, I think that at the end of the day, it does play a psychological effect. And I think that it very subtly changed his mechanics. And I think we're seeing the same kind of breakdown in Clayton Kershaw, where when the lower body starts to break down and you have problems with your base, you know, problems setting up that and pushing off of your feet or pushing off of the hips, rotating, et cetera, like with Kershaw, you start to overcompensate with the upper body, and that leads to upper body injuries, as we also seeing with Kershaw. So, I mean, I just want to see Wainwright healthy. I don't want to overtax him. You know, I don't want what happened with Chris Carpenter to happen to him or anything like that, because he's pitching so much on a changed motion, on an unhealthy motion. I mean, at the end of the day, just don't make him pitch too much. Just give him some time to rest. You know, don't strain him at the end of the day. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about making sure that he gets out and that he leaves the league in a dignified and healthy manner. And for me, that would mean putting him in the bullpen. I mean, since the beginning of the year. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he should be in the bullpen. He should have been in the bullpen a while ago, and he should be in the bullpen now.
And I think some of us would agree with you. I'm not so sure. I would only in the sense that I would just keep him on the DL as long as possible. Dr. Miles, your love letter was great, but when is enough enough for Adam Wainwright?
You know, I read a tweet, and I'm remiss at who put it out, but it really said that, you know, with the history and the legacy of Adam Wainwright, the person who should decide when it's time to be finished is Adam Wainwright. And I do agree with that. You know, last season I wrote about him being finished, and, you know, that got a lot of backlash, and I really felt it then. And the more I looked at it this season, you know what, let him decide. And let me just tell you guys, you know, I'm about one year older than Adam Wainwright. It's probably more like 9 months. But nevertheless, he's in much better shape than I am. But we're both aging. And, you know, I go to the gym and do a workout and that sort of thing. And I was a runner. But I have to tell you, my legs are the things that are going. You know, I can still do some of the weights and the upper body stuff. But I had to cut back on speed on my run. And I don't have an Achilles injury. But I did a pretty decent run on Monday, yesterday. And I got to tell you guys, I didn't recover from it. I'm feeling it today, every bit of it. So I can only imagine how aching and sore an Achilles injury would be to him. And the lack of his velocity coming from the fact that, you know, he's in his upper 30s. And the bottom part of the body, and we're seeing this in Kershaw too, just like Christian said, you know, we're watching these boys who've turned into men, and the body just stops. It just stops doing stuff. And that's what he's faced with. That's what he's struggling through. But at the end of the day, he's going to have to come to terms with it, to the point to where he's ready to say, you know what, I'm ready to gracefully exit. And as I wrote in that piece, that love letter to him, was I don't want him to exit in a manner in which we will forever remember him leaving in that way. So if he needs to come back and spend the rest of the season in the bullpen so that when he comes out and he faces three batters or five batters max, he comes out and does a fantastic job. Then he leaves at the end of the season and decides, you know what, I'm in too much pain, I'm going to retire. All of us will say, gosh, once they move Wainwright back into the pen, wasn't that a great final season? And by the way, maybe he goes to the pen and he says, hey, you know what? I think I got one more year in me. Then he gets another year and he does it in the pen. But he has to decide that. And I hope they are having those conversations. I hope he and his wife are having those conversations, because this is going to be a bigger impact than just to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes. And I'll quickly give my thoughts on this, mainly because I thought Craig Mish's tweet pretty much said it all to me. And if you missed it yesterday, Craig Mish on Twitter posted that he heard from a source that Adam Wainwright had not fully recovered from his Achilles injury. And honestly, I have no reason to doubt that. And it's not because on past, you know, his past performances through the, you know, the last year and a half or so. It's the fact that his body is older and it takes a long time to recover, especially from an injury like that. But my issue with this tweet isn't necessarily that portion of it. It's pride is a real bitch sometimes. And if you are willing to put your pride in front of the team, I think that's a mistake. Nobody likes that. And it's not necessarily selfish, but it doesn't send the right message. And I understand he wants to be in control of his destiny, and I totally agree with that. If he's going to make the call, it should be him. But you have to realize that there is a greater thing going on than the legacy of Adam Wainwright at this point. His legacy was 2006 and 2012-13. It wasn't even 2011 when he wasn't even a pitcher for the Cardinals. He was dealing with Tommy John then. But if you're going to sit there and tell me, say, yeah, I've been pitching hurt, but saying you can do this, and your performances don't show that, it gets really frustrating. And it gets very frustrating when people get called out for pretty much saying what everybody is saying right now, but nobody else wants to bash those people for calling Adam out. So I find it very ridiculous that Adam would put his pride like that in front of the team. But I get it. I get it. And I really hope that he does get healthy, and I really hope that he gets a chance to pitch again. And I hope he's great for the Cardinals. But if he's not there anymore, if it's not there, then call it. Just call it. Nobody is taking anything away from you from that.
Did you see the comment that supposedly Wainwright said when he was interviewed about going back onto the disabled list, when he said something along the lines of, you know, the team deserves better, you know, my teammates deserve better, the fans deserve better. And then he said something very interesting, at least it was interesting to me, and that's when he said, there are young guys who are performing better than I am right now who are waiting for their call, and I'm standing in their way. And I'm paraphrasing.
Where was that last year, though? Where was that last year?
I don't disagree with you, because remember last year I said it was time for him to step aside, and I got hammered for it. So I appreciate what you said, and I'm still saying I think it's time for him to step aside. You know, my love letter to him actually said, I think you should come back and go to the pen, if you come back at all. But what's interesting to me about his comment is I am very much inclined to believe he will not be coming back based on that comment. And I hate to say that I hope that's true, but I hope we see Adam make a decision just exactly like you said, in opposition of his pride, to the point of saying, I'm going to make the decision that's better for the team and for the teammates. Oh, and by the way, thank you, John Mozeliak, for giving me a contract to come into the front office and whatever that may look like. And that become his legacy. That to me would just be fantastic. But his comment about the younger guys, I think, speaks to where his mind is sitting right now in terms of his future. That's just me. I'm just reading into it. That's my supposition. So anyone who wants to come at me, that's my supposition, Adam Wainwright. This knucklehead is just supposing based on what you said.
Yeah, and I don't want anybody to get me wrong either. I'm not trying to bash Adam here. I'm just simply saying, if you're pitching hurt and you know you're pitching hurt, there's a difference between that and pride, in my opinion. And I played baseball, and I played hurt, and I did the exact same thing. And I came to the realization that it's not pride that takes over at that point. You're doing it to prove it to yourself that you can do it, but everybody else around knows that it's time. And I'm not trying to say that, you know, gosh, he's the worst pitcher we've seen in the last year or two, because that's definitely not true. I've seen worse, Brett Cecil. But you have to make decisions for, you know, the greater good at some time. And I think that time has come. And I don't want it to be that way. But, you know, think about it this way. What happens if Yadier Molina next year goes through the same regression, hits 250, 6 home runs, 40 RBIs. Are people going to be calling for him to step down too, knowing that they've got somebody like Andrew Knizer in Springfield more than likely going to make his way to AAA this year? I mean, at some point you have to face reality, and I think maybe that is where this is going, and maybe he doesn't come back. And if that's the case, you know, I want him to be healthy, like Christian said. But you have to make a baseball decision, and not only that, you have to make business decisions too. And that's more to John Mozeliak than anything else. So, anything else, Christian or Dr. Miles?
I think to the whole of the Yachty point, I think that this, I think it might even be more of a push if he regresses hard, especially because of the contract that we gave at the end of the day.
While
people obviously weren't complaining about it because it's Yadier Molina, at the end of the day, holding on to, if you're looking at it from like a totally, entirely objective standpoint, if you got a guy hitting, as you said, if say we'll pull those numbers, 250, whatever, 6 home runs, 40 RBIs, no matter how strong of like, no matter how threatening defensively he is, no matter how like strong of a player, at the end of the day, considering the age, the circumstances, and the amount of money, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, that that would be the decision that would be made. And so that's part of the reason why I think it's time now is more ripe than ever for Wainwright to step back. And I think to that point, the comments that, that Wainwright made, I think it's it to me, once again, this is a supposition. I'm supposing, based off of those comments, that, I mean, it that feels like an admission of yeah, I'm sort of headed toward the end. It's almost like he didn't want to admit that his body was breaking down. He didn't want to admit that he wasn't the same guy. He didn't really want to admit that things were coming to an end, because I'm sure he loves this and he loves all of it and he doesn't want it to come to an end. But to me, it feels like that those last comments sort of feel like, yeah, I mean, shit, this is it.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't disagree. I know that it's tough, and I think if he does step away, he's making the right call, and I hope he understands that. You know, and it's tough. I don't want to see him go, but at the end of the day, for the betterment of the team and to put people in positions to succeed, which is probably more important, like a Jack Flaherty and eventually Alex Reyes, you know, you have to make those decisions, and that's just matter of fact. So we're going to take our last break before we get off the air tonight. You're listening to episode 10 of season 2 of the Official Redbird Rants podcast. Stick with us. Okay, welcome back to the Official Redbird Rants podcast, episode 10, season 2. We've got about 10 minutes left in tonight's show. And guys, we've really covered a good amount of topics today, including the Cardinals offense, Adam Wainwright, how they've performed, even Matt Carpenter, and not necessarily Dexter Fowler, although we know his struggles have continued. But we're going to talk about the offense just a little bit more, and more so prospectively about the offense. And I know that this has come up in our circle a couple of times, especially last year and even during the offseason this year, and that is Mr. Manny Machado. And, you know, I've seen some polls go up recently, and I just want to hear your guys' takes on, you know, where you think the Cardinals could be in the race for Manny Machado, if there is one, or if they even participate. Dr. Miles?
You know, knowing the Cardinals' history recently with players, I got to say that if they go after Machado, which I think they should, but if they go after Machado, knowing the Cardinals' history, they're going to end up in second place. Because that seems to be how we fare when we go after big names. That may be different. You know, I want to say go after him, but I can't say that with a Matheny, because I'm so flabbergasted with these lineups and the fact that they won't become solid, and it, just adding, you know, a player like a Machado, who I think, by the way, could be a huge piece for St. Louis. It cannot be with Mike Matheny and John Mabry. So to answer your question directly, look, the Cardinals will come in second place in the race to get Machado if they bet at all, and they will lose out because they have Matheny, and more so than anything else, and probably the money from somebody else. And if I had to guess, I would have said that they would lose out to the Yankees prior to the Giancarlo Stanton signing. I think he may go, you know, to the Angels or someone like that.
All right. You've heard Dr. Miles, Christian. What do you think? Manny Machado, the race is on. Where do the Cardinals sit? And do you think it happens?
Man, it's super tough for me because I've mentioned this in recent times, especially with the Stanton thing, is that the Cardinals historically haven't been a team that really likes to spend a lot of money, that really likes to go after the big guys. And obviously that changed last season with Stanton. And I think that there's a lot of reason for optimism in that, simply because it wasn't really a matter of the Cardinals not going for it and the Cardinals not putting together the correct offers, the correct packages. It was obviously more of Giancarlo Stanton just being a loser and wanting to go to a big city and party and not really caring about winning all that much. But so in that case, I mean, I think that when you look at Machado, obviously first we have to sort of gauge where he is in that sort of where I want to play sense, in the same way that Stanton, you don't want to have that same repeat scenario happen. But if the Cardinals really want to go at him, I mean, it's hard to argue that the Cardinals don't have the prospects and just the overall like value to make a legitimate offer that the Orioles would be very happy with taking. And I think in that regard, and with the offense struggling as it is, I don't know if I would be surprised, but I would be quite interested if the Cardinal, it would be an intriguing move per se, if the Cardinals are able to grab Machado. I think it would be a perfect move because I think that you can put Machado at short and you can move DeJong to third, because I honestly think that DeJong would be a better third baseman than a shortstop. I think that with the lineup stability that Dr. Miles was talking about, I think that Manny Machado would, I mean, at the end of the day, where are you going to bat Matt? You can really only bat Manny Machado. He is your best hitter, so he's going to bat third. And he will be like Yadi was. He will be that rock, and he'll fill that role, and he'll be that guy. And now it would be on Matheny to – it would be easier for Matheny to – or it would be harder for him to screw it up in building around Yadi and Ozuna and Machado, because it's – I mean, you would simply have to sort of lay in the pieces that fit. Obviously, I wouldn't put it past Mike Matheny to screw it up, but that should still be no reason that the Cardinals do not get Machado. If they don't get Machado, it's because A, they didn't go want him enough, B, the Baltimore Orioles didn't want to give him up, or C, he's like Stanton and wanted to play in a big city.
And I think D, or maybe even 1A and 1, you know, or yeah, I guess 1A or 1B would be the Orioles are asking too much. And that is a real possibility too. And I find it interesting, you know, with the news surrounding Machado, and I'll have a piece out hopefully tomorrow about why, you know, the Cardinals should be motivated to get Machado. And that's the point is that they have all the right things going for them that they should get Machado. They have the pieces, prospects-wise, to make a deal happen. I don't think any other team out there could compete with what the Cardinals have. I mean, considering how everybody in their minor league system is playing, you've got a pitcher like Jack Flaherty who is, you know, as big of a trade chip in a prospect as I've seen in a really, really long time. And it would have been even better had, you know, Carson Kelly lived up to his hype at this point. But you also have an out with something with the Orioles as well, and that's a possible move with Matt Carpenter going that way too. You know, he's owed quite a bit of money for the next two seasons, I believe. But the Cardinals could eat some of that and move him to Baltimore. It's possible. Or you could see, you know, and I know this is very unpopular, or would be very unpopular, but you could also move Jed Jerko. You're going to have to move somebody from the infield in order to bring Machado in. And you're more than likely going to move, you know, one of those two, not necessarily Colton Wong anymore, because his defensive ability has just been so phenomenal at second base that it would be pointless to move him. And you're not moving Paul DeJong, so you're really looking at either Jed Jerko or Matt Carpenter. So, you know, there are some possibilities, but I think the Cardinals should be motivated to get Manny Machado based on, you know, their offense. They just haven't lived up to the hype, and that's just been the bottom line. And Machado is tearing the ball this season, and what a season to do it. And going into his free agent year. So I think that's where it could end up. And maybe Dr. Miles is right. Maybe they end up second again. The trade deadline is still pretty far away, but that doesn't mean anything can't happen sooner than that. And you'd have to wonder, you know, if the offense continues to struggle through mid-June, how soon a trade could happen for somebody like Machado. You know, the Cardinals don't have to wait till the July 31st trade deadline. So I think a lot of things could happen, a lot of different scenarios could happen, but I would like to see Manny Machado in a uniform or in a St. Louis Cardinal uniform if the price is worth it. That's going to be the key there. And I think another name to throw out there would be Harrison Bader. And you have to think that since Adam Jones is coming off of his contract this year, the Orioles would look for some young controllable outfielders. So just keep an eye on it. I think that there's something there. But that's going to do it for us guys here tonight. Thank you for listening to the official Redbird Rants podcast, episode 10, season 2. Catch us next week. We're going to switch back to two a weeks on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So you'll hear us next Tuesday, probably around 9:30 again, for another one-hour episode. For Dr. Miles and Christian, I'm Tito. We'll see you later, and go Cards.
Go Cardinals.
Go Cards.